Welcome to the Places Where We Go podcast. Hello, I'm Julie.
And I'm Art. We're the hosts of the Places Where We Go podcast. Join us as we share our travel stories. We'll tell you about where we've been, what we saw, and what we did. We're always looking for a bit of an adventure.
Sometimes we travel far. Sometimes we explore the places in our own local backyard. Wherever we go, we'll let you know about the highlights and top tips to help you plan your future adventures.
This is the Places Where We Go podcast. Welcome to today's episode, where we're going to take a trip to a place where Hollywood, England, and Poland intersect. Today, we're going to visit Austerlitz House and Richmond Palace in London, England.
We had mapped this out way beforehand because it did have connections, especially to your father. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Hollywood, and there was an actress that actually lived in this Austerlitz home, and she went by the name then of Lady Jersey.
Yes, she did.
Her name was Virginia Cheryl, and she was a Hollywood actress way back in the 20s.
Yeah, in the movies with the likes of Charlie Chaplin mm-hmm. and then several others in kind of the early days of Hollywood.
Let's explain that a little bit and go a little bit further into how that connection happened.
Interesting story in that both of my parents are from Poland and my lineage is 100% Polish. But it turned out that during the time of the war, World War II, my dad, by part luck, by part circumstance, etc., found himself as a teenage boy along with his twin brother in England serving as part of a Polish contingent in the Royal Air Force.
Right. And when we say as a teenage boy, a very, very young teenage boy, but at the age of 14, mm-hmm. they were actually volunteered for the Polish Army.
Enlisted. And I think mm-hmm. we'll get into more of the details of that because that's a pretty fascinating story on our upcoming episode when we talk about Halton, England. And one of the things that apparently happened is while he was in this school in Halton, England, there would be times throughout the year where the military school would let out. I'm assuming, you know, Christmas time is one
holidays
example.
Holidays and leaves, you know, where they could leave the base.
Yeah. And so when these leaves happened, there would be people that would take in these Polish boys, kind of, you know, quote unquote, adopt them in for the holiday time, the getaway time.
Because mm-hmm. they had nowhere else to go.
And the lady that ended up taking my dad in was Virginia Cheryl, the Hollywood actress who at the time was married to Lord Jersey. And resided in some magnificent places in England. And so when I was growing up, my dad had mentioned, you know, over the years, this experience of being in this palace type of environment, along with Virginia Cheryl, a lady that he called Ciocia the whole time that I was growing up, which is aunt in Polish. And my dad passed away in 1994. The thing that I didn't know was 100% which residence of Virginia Cheryl's would my dad have been in. So in doing some research, there was two main properties that were attributed to her being in when she was married to Lord Jersey. Mm-hmm. One of them was Austerlitz House. I guess it's in London or yes. kind of on the outskirts of
it is. And it's very surrounded by a very urban type area as of today.
And then the other property was Richmond Palace. I kind of, you know, zeroed into those two places. And then obviously knowing that we were going to be going to the UK, those got put on our itinerary as places to try to visit.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest clues that you have is more definitively that your dad mentioned palace. So he did say he did go to the palace. So I can pretty 100% sure say that he was at the Richmond Palace, but it's quite possible he was also at Austerlitz House.
Yeah, I think both are plausible. Yeah. So before we get into those two places and talk about visiting them, Let's talk about how we even got ourselves to London.
Yeah, so we were waiting in Bath. While we were waiting at the train station in Bath, we waited about a half an hour, I would say, for the train to come that was on its way to London. And we started seeing messages on the boards that said that the train was full, that it was standing room only. And so we spent a bit of a time going back and forth. Do we get on this one? Do we wait for the next one? I think the next one was, it was like every half hour or something it would come.
At least a half hour.
Yeah.
We would have waited.
Yeah.
But so I think we were a little anxious to get to London.
We were very anxious to get to London. So the train arrived and sure enough, it was full.
Standing room only.
Yes. We were kind of lucky to get on.
Yeah.
We pushed our way through. I said, let's go for it. Just pushed our way in, and we never got even anywhere near a chair.
No, we were kind of in that back-ish area.
In between the carriages.
Yeah, in between the cars. There was bicycles to one side of us. I was right adjacent to the potty room, which was not necessarily the funnest place to be for 90-some-odd minutes. And during the whole journey, because we were like in between the two cars, there was this automatic door that would keep trying to close.
And we had our backpacks on.
Mm-hmm. And it kept smashing into my backpack. I would say, once every 10 seconds or something?
Yeah.
It was free. I mean, for 90 minutes, this was going on. And there was nowhere to move. There was nowhere to go, nowhere to sit. But we finally got ourselves to Paddington Station. Once in London, now we had to figure out this new thing that they had there called, new to us, called the Tube.
Mm-hmm.
Before we left, I actually work with a gentleman who hails from England, and he told me about this thing called the Oyster Card.
Thank goodness he did.
Yeah, which he recommended that we should get. So if you're not from the UK and if you're traveling into London, highly recommend getting the Oyster Card. And so this is basically, this ticket that you can use to get you on the Tube all over London. You can purchase it for a specified number of days. So we purchased ours for the amount of days that we were going to be in London, which was, I think, close to
7 days, a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then London, the greater London area is also broken down into these zones. So once you start out from the very center, you can almost think about these ovals that, you know, the further out the oval goes, becomes another zone. And I think there's 7 zones, give or take.
Something like that, yeah. And we had, or you had researched enough to know that most of what we wanted was in zones 1 through 4.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we zeroed in on.
And next thing you know, we're hopping on the Tube, and I kind of felt like we had been, like, we're old pros at this by the time we were done with our first
Tube
ride.
You're the old pro. Yeah. You're the one. I just follow you. That's all I do is follow you.
But the Tube was great because we got around so many parts of London during our time there, and it just felt so easy. You know, we would walk from our hotel 3 blocks, maybe, if that.
Yeah, very close.
Hopped on the Tube, and one day we're going to Austerlitz. One day we're going to the Tower of London. One day we're going to Abbey Road, and within a couple of blocks of anywhere that you are, there's a Tube stop. You hop on and you kind of look at the map to figure out where you want to go, if you need to change the line or not.
We never had any long walks to anything, really.
Nope. So day one that we're in London, you know, we checked into our hotel, and then our first thing that was on our list was trying to check the box off on Austerlitz House and Gardens, as well as Richmond Palace. So let's start with doing a review of Austerlitz House, which is a place that is open to the public. And again, the thing that was primary of interest for me of why we wanted to go here was trying to find out if this was the place that my dad would have stayed in back in the 1940s when he was spending time with Virginia Cheryl. Mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming it would have been with Lord Jersey too, but he always talked about her.
Yeah, no, I think she was the one that was
probably spent time.
The only one that really spent time with them. I think he probably had other business or whatever, but she was very interested in making life for these boys about as normal as possible.
Yeah.
You know,
And made it incredibly memorable because my dad had spoken about these times, you know, over the years that he spent there my entire life. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of neat to have the opportunity to try to get to where he spent some of these memories. So Austerlitz Park it's a fairly large park. It's one of the largest open spaces in all of London. And on its grounds, there's this enormous mansion that is referred to as Austerley House. To tour the main house, at least when we went, it was open from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., so kind of a limited window. And then if you're able to get to tour the upstairs of the property, that's only open for an hour a day. So if you plan to visit Austerley House in this particular area, you do have to be kind of specific to try to figure out when it's going to be open relative to when you're planning to go there.
Right. And because it is such an expansive acreage with lots of parks and that beautiful mansion, mm-hmm. and there's stables, you know, next to the mansion, and there's gardens, there's all these really beautiful spots there. They do rent out the place for filming. Mm-hmm. And we actually happened to get there when they were filming.
Yeah, and that actually kept us out of being able to see the top floor because they were filming on the top floor. So
Right. Yeah, well, even the first floor was limited. There was a tour that took you through a few rooms, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, but we saw some pretty cool stuff. So
very cool.
£12 will get you in if you're an adult. So we got off the tube at, I think it was the Austerley stop.
It took us 20, 25 minutes.
To
walk there from the tube.
Okay.
I mean, it was a nice, pleasant walk. You know, there was no problems.
And I think part of that, the length of the walk was actually going through part of the property, though, too. You walk down the main street that the tube mm-hmm. station is on, and then you end up from where we were, you kind of hang a left, and you're walking up toward Austerley.
Yeah, this is before you got it even to the gates.
But once you get to the property, now you're walking down this fairly huge expanse of tree-lined driveway.
It looks very like something you would see a southern mansion somewhere in America.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Kind with of that the tree-lined
plantation feel, almost.
Yeah, it did. It was very much so.
You know, we made that walk, and we're walking through this very beautiful kind of park area, and then you come across this huge water feature, probably not big enough to be called a lake, but much bigger than something you'd call a pond.
I think it was called a lake. I think they actually, there was a name for it. I can't tell you what it is, but I think it was a lake. I'm not sure if it was something that was kind of created for the property.
Yeah, so one of the things that I had read is the grounds of the property, including the water area, it turns out to be an oasis for wildlife in mm-hmm. London. So because London is fairly urbanized, and while on the one hand you do have the vast expanse of Hyde Park, you do have some, you know, limited areas of natural space for wildlife, and the Austerley grounds do provide some of that. So you've got woodlands, grasslands. This is a property that's known as a great habitat for birds.
Mm-hmm. So this is the National Trust that cares for that property also.
And then once you get past the water feature, now you make eye contact with the property.
The mansion itself.
It has these Greek columns, so, you know, fairly impressive.
Massive stairwell going up to the front entrance. It was large. I mean, you turn the corner around that lake because there's lots of trees before mm-hmm. you see anything. And you just look and it's just massive. It's huge.
And so this is a property that has a history that goes back at least to the 1570s when there was a Tudor house that was built there by a gentleman named Sir Thomas Gresham. And then it was acquired by Sir Francis Child in the 1700s, who was a wealthy banker. And he engaged a gentleman named Robert Adam to transform Austerley in what would have been called the Palace of Palaces that you see today. So there's a lot of Adam's footprint in terms of the work that he did on the property. Once you go inside and you see the furnishings, the architecture are going to be attributed in large part to this gentleman, Robert Adam, who had a big stake in developing the property. And then through the years, this property ultimately passed to a lady named Sarah Sophia Fain, who was married to George Child Villiers, who was the fifth Earl of Jersey. And it's at that point when the Austerley property passed into the Jersey family. And then you fast forward to a gentleman named George Child Villiers, who at 13 years old became the 9th Earl of Jersey. And his second wife was Virginia Cheryl, the actress that we have mentioned. And probably the most famous film that she was in was Charlie Chaplin movie from 1931 called City Lights, where she played the blind flower girl. So that was probably one of the latter silent movies that was made, because I think it was not too long after that that the talkies started. And she did have some roles in films, even in the talking era, but her claim to fame was in this movie, City Lights. And so the property of Austerley would start to get updated by the 9th Earl of Jersey. So we'll call him Lord Jersey from kind of this point forward. And by 1939, this property was open to the public again, to a certain extent, in terms of that they started to host, you know, lavish balls, lavish events. Mm-hmm. And
this is all pre-war.
This is when Virginia Cheryl would have been part of the hosting contingent at the property. By 1939, Lord Jersey had also started to make his art collection on display for the public,
which was quite large.
And during the summer of 1939, there was nearly 19,000 people who visited the house property, 27,000 people who visited the grounds. And one of the attractions there would have been to see the art collection of Lord Jersey.
So this property was then trusted over or given to the National Trust that we mentioned earlier by Lord Jersey himself. It was a gift, along with the acreage that surrounded it. And they have been in possession of it since and have continued to keep it open to the public. And this is what we have today. And this is what we visited when we went up there.
One of the things that we learned, though, was while Lord Jersey was an avid art collector and he had some pieces that were, I mean, he had museum quality works of art, when he did bequeath the property over to the National Trust so that the general public could enjoy the property, among the things that he took with him were the art pieces that were hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And most of the furniture.
But the art pieces got put into a warehouse in Jersey. And within 1 year, mm-hmm. all of those art pieces were lost to a fire.
Big warehouse fire.
So just like that, poof, gone. Mm-hmm. So when you visit the property today, while there's fairly impressive paintings on the wall, the paintings are not original to the time of Lord Jersey. Though we were told that most of the furnishings and the tapestries that are in the property are.
That are currently there. He took a lot of the furniture, but he did leave a few pieces there. And when we had entered too, there was that big, large room. You come into the entrance hall, which is what the guests would have done. So mm-hmm. your guests would have come in and been greeted at the entrance hall and their coats taken and, you know, all this kind of stuff and maybe given some champagne or something. And right behind that is this very long room that was intended for art display.
Yeah, and that's called the Long Gallery.
So we had entered into that where there was a couple of docents that were there. Also, there was a young lady in the front. Remember her? She's mm-hmm. a sweet girl. And we told her our story. And she goes, you know what? Just go in. And she didn't even make us pay, which was very sweet of her.
Yeah.
But I think she was very moved by, you know, the story that your dad might have actually been there during the wartime.
So when you walk into the Long Gallery, this room is 40 meters long. I mean, it's a fairly lengthy room. And all of the walls are covered with museum quality artwork. And so again, while it's not the artwork that would have been there in the 1940s, they did try to design the look and feel of the room when you visit today to kind of make it appear like it would have during the time of Lord Jersey.
It was a beautiful display of art. It was gorgeous.
The furnishings there, let's just say that they're not IKEA type pieces.
No, very lavish.
Each of them was a work of art.
Yes. And in that long room, there was one very, very long sofa in particular. They had it roped off, but they said that that was an original piece from Lord Jersey. So, you know, we saw that as we were speaking to the docent. You told them the story first. And then I kind of came up and was listening in. And I remember they were almost sure that the boys would have been there.
So we did take the opportunity to strike up a conversation with the docents. And I think when I started to tell them the events of my dad and trying to figure out if he would have been at this property, I mean, it started to become an emotional experience for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But it was interesting because I wasn't sure, in part because it wasn't coming up in a lot of the research, the attribution of Virginia Cheryl spending time at the property. And from what I've been gathering, I think there's a certain sense of, because she ended up leaving Lord Jersey, I don't know, they try to like push that part of the history aside and kind of de-emphasize it. It was notable that the docents were very much aware of her time at the property, her mm-hmm. contributions to the property. Mm-hmm. And they also were well aware of her spending time with kind of befriending the boys from the Royal Air Force right. who were part of the Polish contingent mm-hmm. that my dad would have been a part of, that he was a part of. And when we started to have the conversation about, you know, pointing out that there was one of two properties that the boys would have stayed at, one could have been Austerlitz House, the other one could have been Richmond Palace. The gentleman docent that we spoke with, he seemed that it was very, very plausible that Virginia had some of the boys spend time at this property. Mm-hmm. So if they did or if they didn't, I don't know for sure. But even if they spent their time at Richmond Palace, that property is fairly close enough to Austerlitz where I could still see it have been possible that they could have traveled to Austerlitz even just to show them.
Well, they were also in Halton, which we will be discussing later, but at the Royal Air Force Base in Halton for a number of years.
I think four at least.
Four or five, I think. Yeah. And so it is absolutely plausible during that time mm-hmm. that they not only spent time at the palace, which they spoke of, mm-hmm. but also at this gigantic, beautiful mansion that she had spent a lot of time at with some entertaining parties. I think at one point it was where they lived. That was their main home on which they lived in.
Yeah. So that would have been a residence of hers at one point in time.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then I also learned, and this kind of recently, that during part of the war years, the Austerlitz property was made available for part of the military. There would have been military personnel at the property. They mm-hmm. did military training on the property.
Yeah, a lot of acreage. It's like 140 acres.
And even knowing that, given that my dad was part of the Royal Air Force contingent, I could see that he would have had a pathway of sorts to get on the property even when that was going mm-hmm. on. So moving on into the property. So we talked about the long gallery. From there, we moved on to a room called the Tapestry Room. And this was the first of a series of rooms that make up what they call the state apartments. And these are designed to impress and entertain important guests such as royalty. And they're covered in tapestries today that took 4 years to complete and contain references to gardens and animals and what's depicted on the walls. So,
yes. And this is one thing that is original to Austerlitz House. Yeah. The next room that we had moved into is what they call the state bedchamber. So it was actually designed for a king or a queen to come and visit some monarch.
Mm-hmm.
It was very stately, very gorgeous, well overly done. It was just gorgeous. But they had created this room just in case. And to our dismay, apparently there was no monarch that stayed overnight there.
Never visited.
stayed overnight. I think there was Queen Elizabeth, I think, actually visited. But I don't know when she visited. But there was no monarch that stayed overnight in that room.
They were prepared.
They were ready.
One of the things we learned is that Robert Child, who had funded the design of the bed chamber, upon receiving the bill for the state bed, was so shaken that once settled, he tore up the bill saying no one must ever know what it cost. So that gives you some sense of what went into funding the monarch room.
There looked like there was a lot of gold sparkling and shining in that room. Yeah. So it gives you a little idea.
Yeah. So I think we saw one more room in the downstairs, which was the Etruscan dressing room. And this was a room that had all kinds of ancient Greek ornamentation in the room. On the walls, there was a kind of a painted wallpaper. I think it was a canvas that was painted, and then it was affixed to the wall. So another room that was really prestigious. And while it was noted to be a dressing room, this is a room that, as far as the people there know today, that nobody ever actually used it as a dressing area. So the property has the monarch room that was never visited by a monarch, the dressing room that nobody ever got dressed in. So it's got some peculiarities like that too. We got through, I think, the downstairs, what would you say, in about an hour or so, including the discussions with the docents. Mm-hmm. And as mentioned, the top floor was not open because there was filming going on upstairs, but we did have a chance to tour the gardens.
Yes. Now, the top floor was a little bit disappointing for me because that was the private quarters of the child's. You would imagine in your mind that that's where Lady Jersey took the Polish boys to come up and, you know, have tea and cake and entertain them and make them feel at home and comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the gardens were, I mean, they were large, right? So, you know, we spent, you know, some time strolling them. You know, I can only imagine how many gardeners they have on staff to keep up that property. But a very nice, you know, relaxing walking path that takes you through
all. A few outbuildings out there that were kind of in disrepair. I'm not sure what the purpose of them were. There could have been a guest house there. There was the stables, which we didn't go into because the filming was taking place there.
But one of the buildings that is there that we were able to go into was one that was called the Temple of Pan. Mm-hmm. And that was used as a relaxation room in the garden area by the Austerlitz visitors. And this structure was restored in the 1930s by the Jersey family. Yeah. So overall, the time that we spent at the Austerlitz House and Gardens was 2 hours.
Yes, and we did take our time. We weren't in any rush. So it was very leisure, casual walk through the gardens. And there's a pathway there. So if you are wheelchair bound or something, you know, that limits you, I think it's a little easy pathway there. You'd have no problem, you know, taking that
So if you're going to visit Austerlitz House and Gardens, I would plan for a minimum of 2 hours. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to get there when you can visit the top floor, then I could imagine that probably is going to extend your stay to upwards of 3 hours or so. Yeah. A few fun facts about Austerlitz. So, Julie, you had mentioned that there was some filming that had occurred there and continues to occur there. Among the movies that were shot there, the 1960 film, The Grass is Greener, which starred Cary Grant.
Which was Virginia Cherryl's second husband.
Yeah, so before she married Lord Jersey, she was married to Cary Grant. Yes. So I thought it was kind of ironic that Cary Grant starred in a movie that was filmed at the house that his ex-wife had resided in
during the 1940s. And then in more recent times, in 2012, we have the Batman film, The Dark Knight Rises. The interior of the mansion is used as a double for the Wayne Manor.
One of the things we also learned is that there's this collection of properties that are maintained by the National Trust. There's at least 10 in the London area, if not more. So if stately properties, including their architecture, their interior design, their artwork, etc., is of interest, you can spend quite a bit of your time in the London area just touring these houses that are maintained by the National Trust.
You can also get a ticket from the National Trust that will cover all of these mansions, buildings, everything that's under this National Trust if you choose to kind of go from place to place to place and not have to pay for each property.
So after we visited Austerlitz, we still had time in the afternoon to try to get ourselves over to Richmond Palace. And this was a place that when we were planning the itinerary, I had some difficulty trying to figure out exactly where this place is located.
Right.
And part of it is because this property, unlike Austerlitz, is not open to the public anymore.
Actually, it's a private residence.
Yeah, in fact, I don't know. It probably never was open to the public, but yeah, today it's in private hands. Yeah. So it's not a place that you can visit the interior of unless you happen to be connected to the right people, which we were not. But after quite a bit of research, I did find exactly where the place is, and I was able to kind of double check that location by looking at, there were some photos that I had seen that were published in a book that had some mention of Virginia Cheryl, that had photos of what they called the gatehouse at Richmond Palace. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at those in concert with what I was finding out on the internet of where this place was, I mean, it was identical. So mm-hmm. we knew we found the right place. So, but we're back on the tube. We're going from Austerlitz, I think it was, to the Richmond tube stop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to make our way to find this private residence that we knew we weren't going to be able to get inside. But, you know, traveling through the Richmond area, we're off of the tube and we're making our way down a fairly busy street. And this place was pretty bustling. People everywhere, you know, walking. And
we're in the middle of a city.
Ultimately, we find a place to turn off that takes us to what I believe is called Richmond Park. And so this was a kind of nice size green space that people were just spending time relaxing in.
And that was kind of a clue, you know, that we were looking for, is to find that green area. Mm-hmm.
And we made our way through the green, and there's, you know, properties surrounding the green space. And, you know, then we're trying to figure out, okay, which one of these is or was Richmond Palace. And when we got to probably somewhere around the middle of the green space, we ran into a plaque. And this is a plaque that had a stated history of Richmond Palace. And when you're reading the plaque and then just looking beyond it into the homes that are in front of you, there you see what was Richmond Palace.
Yes. And it did have a tall stone wall around it. Mm-hmm. And there was a entrance area. It was gated. And it had a area that you could walk into to get inside. But of course, it was private property.
Yeah.
So we felt that we didn't have any right to go into the property. But, you know, me being me, you kept standing back. I'm like, no way, we're going.
Yeah, so we kind of made our way under the ground.
Yeah, we went onto that driveway, you know, the area and towards the gate. And I stepped in, and sure enough, as we stepped in, we saw the gatehouse and took a picture of it. And, you know, I made you stand over there.
Yes, we got some photos.
Yeah.
As part of my research, I mean, I did definitively come across in some books where there was discussions about Virginia Cheryl, a.k.a. Lady Jersey, who had actually hosted parties at the Richmond property for what was referred to as her band of Polish sons. So, and that would have been my dad, mm-hmm. His twin brother, and several of the other boys from the Halton School. Yeah, so it was interesting. So even though we couldn't walk into this place, I still kind of felt compelled to go there and see it and just to kind of figure out where my dad had been. Just this fascinating story of this, you know, 14-year-old kid who was, you know, had to leave his family, had to, you know, he was there without his mom, without his siblings other than my uncle, his twin, mm-hmm. not knowing the language, not knowing what the heck was in store after
his father had passed.
In the mid-1940s, he's in London.
By way of Jerusalem.
So we'll
very
get
interesting
into that story.
I can't help it.
When
it
we talk about the Halton
so
episode. So with the Richmond Palace, you can't go in the inside. You can see it from the outside. There's this, you know, fairly informative plaque that you can read about the property today. Among some of the highlights, so this is a residence that has its roots that go back to the 1200s. So the general property has been around for a long time. And while the building that stands there today is not original back to the 1200s, it is fairly old, but Richmond Palace, once upon a time, was the residence of Henry I. So you have monarchy that has stayed there. The property was then granted to lay people and remained such until the manor house was rented by Edward, the Prince of Wales, in 1290s. So, Julie, with your connection to Wales, there's Welsh connection there.
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
And then in 1313, the manor reverted back to the monarchy. And additional royals who used the manor included Edward II, Queen Isabella, Richard II, And ultimately, Henry V would begin building a new palace on the property in the 1400s after the prior Richard II, whose wife, Anne of Bohemia, had died at the property of the plague. He ordered the property that was on the grounds before to be destroyed. So Henry V is the guy who built a new palace on the property, and it was completed during the reign of Henry VI. The second palace was then also damaged by fire in 1497. So you've had multiple properties that have been stood up on the grounds here. You know, moving forward, you had a new palace that was built there and was used by Henry VII, Henry VIII, and the Richmond Palace was then given to Anne of Cleves as part of her divorce settlement, but she then gave it back to Edward VI. So there's a whole lot of famous English monarchy folks, and then, you know, we go on, you know, there's Queen Mary who was there, and so on and so on. So all kinds of, you know, history, and then you get to the 1940s and Lord Jersey and Lady Jersey,
yeah,
are spending time there. And, you know, there's some of the books I was reading. This is a property that was noted that she was very particularly fond of. The property is still there today. Again, you can't go inside it, but if you happen to be in the Richmond area, I think it's worth the walk over to the park, and you know, you can take a look over at what you can see and read about it and kind of get a glimpse at some ancient history that has this fantastic connection to the monarchy that unless you go and stop at the plaque, you'd never know.
You'd miss it.
Yeah, totally,
miss it. Yeah.
So we're telling you about Richmond Palace, and if you happen to be in the London area, you can take a walk over there and get a glimpse of something that many people don't know about from the historical perspective.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Virginia Cheryl herself. Very, very interesting lady. She was born in 1908, and she died in Santa Barbara here in California in 1996. She was married four times, as we had mentioned. Cary Grant was her second husband. After she married Cary Grant, she left him after 7 months of marriage. That was a short marriage.
What do you think happened there?
Well, she says that Cary Grant was abusive. And there are stories of Cary Grant, because Cary Grant had multiple marriages too. And there are stories of him being abusive to several wives.
So it was time to move on.
Yes. So she moved on and then married the Lord of Jersey, which gave her quite a life. I can't imagine coming from, you know, this Hollywood era to a, you know, somebody of such royalty.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a parallel to that today, isn't there? Isn't there a Hollywood person who married one of the prince people there?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, so there you go. There's, you know, it's not the first time that somebody from Hollywood has made their way into the royalty.
Yes, there
in
must
England.
There must be something to that. But she finally settled down, as I said, and married Florian Martini, who was a Polish airman. I'm sure that's not his Polish name. I'm sure it was changed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Martini?
Well, yeah, so Martini doesn't sound Polish, you know, it's not like Martinsky or anything like that, but yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure it must have been changed, but he was a Polish airman whose squadron she had looked after during World War II. He had found a job working here back in the States at Lockheed Martin in Santa Barbara, and that's where both of them came to settle and live. And she was 88 when she passed away. And I know from listening to you that you have several fond memories of her being in Santa Barbara and the visits you had with her.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting to me, like when you go through the history of her marriages, you know, here you have a lady who was married to a famous Hollywood movie star, a member of the royalty, and then ultimately, you know, settled down with this Polish airman and lived with him for...
That was her longest marriage.
40 years.
Yeah,
40
longest
years.
Marriage.
Yeah. So I had the opportunity to meet Virginia Cheryl several times growing up. So the first memory that I had of her, my parents were living in Hollywood, and I remember her coming to the house to visit, and I must have been 6 years old or just probably not even seven, you know, really young. And I remember her asking me, like, what I wanted for my birthday, or for it was either birthday or Christmas, one or the other. And I remember telling her that I wanted a pool. And in my six-year-old head, I was thinking pool table. Because I had seen like pool tables, so I thought it'd be kind of cool to have a pool table-y type of thing. And, you know, she had left. And, you know, in the mail several weeks later, this big package arrives from Virginia Cheryl. So I'm opening it up. I'm a kid. I'm all excited. And it's a pool, all right. It's a, like a swimming pool kind of thing. So, you know, bigger than a blow-up pool. You know, not like a huge pool, but, you know, for a six-year-old kid, it was kind of big enough that we set it up on the patio. So that was my first memory of meeting her. And then, you know, through the years growing up, my dad kept in constant contact with her. So there would be, you know, fairly frequent phone calls. And I swear, I think he probably had more discussions with her than he did with his own mom, it almost seemed like. So very fond.
Very tight. Very connectivity. Emotional type.
During his entire life, she was always Chocha to him. She was always his kind
Which
of adopted aunt.
In English, yeah.
And then the last time that I had spent time with her, I would have been a teenager, probably 17 years old or so, and we had a chance to visit her and Florian Martini at the Santa Barbara property. I remember we had lunch right off of State Street in Santa Barbara, so there was a Mexican place. And then, you know, visited her property and spent an afternoon with her. And it's one of those things that, you know, if I had a chance in later years to spend time with her, I would have so many questions, you know, to ask.
Oh my
and
gosh,
kind
yes.
of unfortunate that don't have that opportunity today.
Right.
But that was a neat connection. And it was neat to be able to finally, after, you know, a long, long time and hearing these stories throughout my dad's life, to be able to, as part of this visit, try to walk some of the footsteps of where he had been and kind of connect the dots with Virginia Cheryl as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
who was quite famous in her time, who has a star on the Walk of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
On Vine Street.
Yes, 1545 Vine Street. That's where you find her Walk of Fame star.
So probably next time we go to Hollywood, I'm going to have to make a note. We're going to have to go there and maybe take a photo at the star there.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So let's talk food.
Yeah, because after all of that visiting palaces and royalty houses, we were hungry.
Yes, and we were actually looking for a Polish restaurant. And you had found one.
Yeah, so in the South Kensington area.
Cafe Dakis.
D-A-Q-U-I-S-E. So I think it's Dakis.
Yes. And it was quite the Polish restaurant. It was very, very authentic.
Yes,
I thought.
Kind of, you know, very, it felt formal inside.
In a good way. Yeah, I think we were a little underdressed, but they didn't seem to care.
Yeah.
Everybody spoke Polish.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some that didn't even speak English. They had a hard time understanding English. So it felt very, very Polish. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of the traditional foods.
And we sampled quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we had the red beets and horseradish cream sauce with lots and lots of dill, which is one of my favorite.
Yeah, if you've got Polish food, you got to throw the dill on.
Yeah, you got to have the dill on it.
The Mexicans have their cilantro. We have the dill.
And we had kapusta pierogi that had kapusta in it, which
cabbage.
Is cabbage. Yeah. Which was very good, and I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was not better than your mom's, but it was up there.
It was very enjoyable.
It was very different from your mom's. And then our main dish was the poached salmon. And I think we just wanted fish. I wanted fish. I remember just thinking I wanted some fish because we hadn't had a lot of that.
That was done well. That was served with a side of boiled potatoes, which also had more dill on it. So bring on the dill was the recipe going on there. And there were some root vegetables that accompanied that. And then I ordered a side of potato dumplings because I had to try a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Which is called in Polish?
Kluski.
Kluski.
Yeah. But
they called it something else.
Yeah, it was something else on the menu, but it would have been the way my mom makes it. She refers to it as Kluski.
Yeah.
And by that time, I think we were out of room for dessert.
Yes.
But they did offer us...
he was very insistent.
A nightcap of sorts.
Yes.
So he topped off our meal with a cherry Vishnyovka or a vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And we toasted my dad with that.
Mm-hmm.
In his memory, given the touring of the day that we had done. And you can see, you know, the places that we talked about, the things that we saw, if you go to theplaceswherewego.com and type in Austerlitz in the search bar there, it'll take you to the blog post from that particular day. And then I'd recommend to just go and kind of scroll through some of the photos that we took throughout that day. It'll give you a sense of what it is that we're talking about.
Right.
Here. Yeah.
So we weren't done with walking your dad's footsteps. We still have more to come, but we were definitely on our way to explore more of London and the area there. I had a fantastic time at Austerlitz. I thought it was just the most majestic, wonderful place to be. I really, really liked it. And Richmond had its own flavor to it because it was right in the middle of a city. But knowing that your dad was there, and I'm sure he was, I'm positive he was there, that made it extremely, extremely special and enjoyable. And I hope someday we can go back and ask those private owners, give them our story. And say, hey,
knock
can't
on
you
the
just
door.
Let them in? Yeah. Let us in, just to look.
If you like those uncommon gems that you can sometimes find in cities, Austerlitz House and Gardens is going to be one of those that you'll find in London.
Yes, and definitely look at the National Trust. Mm-hmm. Google that before you go, because there are several other types of buildings that have these fantastic histories too that you can explore.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for today. When we continue our travels through London, I think next we're probably going to go to Halton, England, where we have kind of a continuation of the story of these Polish airmen and military people who joined up with the British military and the Royal Air Force. And there's quite the history that is available still to see there. So we'll tell you more about that next time. Again, if you enjoy the podcast, give us a like on the podcast engine of your choice. And with that, I'm going to say,
we'll meet you at the places where we go.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
If you have any comments or info to share with us about travel, you can write us at comments@theplaceswherewego.com.
You can also follow us on social media. Right now we're on Twitter and Instagram, both at The Places Where We Go.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope to see you at The Places Where We Go.
See you next time.
Bye now.